The fact that the postmodernists dare to be Marxist is also something that I find, I would say, not so much intellectually reprehensible as morally repugnant. And one of the things that the postmodern neo-Marxists continually claim is that they have nothing but compassion for the downtrodden. And I would say that anybody with more than a cursory knowledge of 20th century history who dares to claim simultaneously that they have compassion for the downtrodden and that they're Marxists are revealing either an ignorance of history that's so astounding that it's actually a form of miracle, or a kind of malevolence that's so reprehensible that it's almost unspeakable. Because we already ran the equity experiment over the course of the 20th century, and we already know what the Marxist doctrines have done for oppressed people all around the world, and the answer to that mostly was imprison them, enslave them, work them to death, or execute them. And as far as I can tell, that's not precisely commensurate with any message of compassion. And so I don't think that the postmodern neo-Marxists have a leg to stand on ethically or intellectually or emotionally. And I think that they should be gone after as hard as possible from an intellectual perspective, an informed intellectual perspective. And this is fundamentally a war of ideas. And that's the level of analysis that it should be fought upon. And not only is it a war of ideas, I think it's one that can be won, because I think that especially the French intellectual postmodernists are a pack of, what would you call them? Well, we could start with charlatans, that's a good one. Pseudo-intellectual would be good, resentful would be another, and then I would also consider them highly deceptive in their intellectual strategies, because almost all of them were Marxist student intellectuals, and they knew by the time the Gulag Archipelago came out, and even before that, that the nightmares of the Soviet Union and Maoist China were of such magnitude that they had completely invalidated any claim to ethical justification that the fundamental Marxist doctrines had ever managed to manifest. And so it's a no-go zone as far as I'm concerned. Intellectually, the game's over. We've already figured out that there are finite constraints on interpretation, and we also understand why those exist and how they evolved. And from the perspective of political argumentation, there's absolutely no excuse whatsoever in the 21st century to put forth Marxist doctrines as if they're the bomb that's needed by the compassionate and by the bomb that's administered by the compassionate to the downtrodden. Sorry, tried that, didn't work. We've got 100 million corpses to prove it, and that's plenty for me. And if it's not enough for you, well, then you should do some serious thinking either about your historical knowledge or about your moral character. So that's the first thing.
Victor Davis Hanson, Senior Fellow in Military History at the Hoover Institution, Professor Emeritus of Classics at California State, author, best-selling author, brilliant author, and National Review contributor. And he doesn't do badly there either. Victor, it's great to have you with us. And turning to what we were watching, I want to put up a full screen that to me is stunning. And I think everybody in America should know this. Let's see the Fortune 500 reporting, reporting on companies who've donated to BLM. Fortune 500 companies. You see those numbers? Those are pledges to the Black Lives Matter organization. Bank of America, $1 billion over 4 years. PepsiCo, $400 million. Walmart, $100 million. Apple, $100 million. Comcast. They are subsidizing a Marxist-inspired organization, and for what reason, I have no idea. Do you, Victor?
Yeah, I do. I think that they do not want a Goya-type boycott. They don't want their franchises the objects of protest. They don't want people showing up at their executives' homes. So in their way of thinking, it's a wise business preemptive decision, and they feel that given their bottom line, it's also a smart use of resources, and then they have zero interest on the social stability and fabric of the United States. I hate to say that, but it's true. And so for them, it's just a straight cut business decision. They don't know anything about Black Lives Matter. They don't want to know anything about Black Lives Matter. They don't want to know about its origins or its agenda. All they want to do is just make it go away. And their usual way of dealing with that is money.
And they're not a nonprofit organization. They're also a Marxist-inspired organization. And they are behind much of the anarchy that we are watching in cities across this country. I want to turn to an article by Victor Davis Hanson in the National Review. And quote from that, if I may, and if you would, put up the full screen of this so we can take a look, the audience can read along. If the multi-billion dollar NFL decides that multi-millionaire players have no obligation to stand to honor a collective national anthem and that there will be separate anthems and politicized uniforms, then millions of Americans will quietly shrug and change the channel. And that silent protest will make the 2016-17 anthem protest look like child's play. We're watching something here that is, the NFL, it seems, is on, there's no question, this is a pivotal moment. Their future is on the edge, it seems to me. If they move ahead with all of that's been discussed, a new anthem, taking on all of these political issues on the field of play. They don't call it the field of protest. It's called the field of play. Your thoughts about where you think we're headed. What will actually happen?
Well, we know what happened in 2017. They lost about 10 to 15% of their viewership, both televised and direct fan participation and attendance. And that won't be anything compared to having an alternate anthem and then politicizing the jerseys with slogans. And this comes on the heels of a lot of anti-Semitic commentary that members of the NFL players have said and their accolades. And remember, Lou, this industry has been exempt from scrutiny. It's been a woke, progressive industry that's lectured America on its shortcomings. And it's lectured us about diversity, and it's got a real problem with diversity because of the 30 teams. There's really not any white owners. I mean, excuse me, non-white owners. And that goes against the whole idea of diversity. And yet 75% of the players are African American. There's only 1% are Hispanic and less than 1% are Asian. So basically what we're going to turn on Sunday to those who would turn on the television is a very non-diverse ownership and a very non-diverse player profile lecturing America how they need to be woke and more diverse. And that's not a sustainable proposition where at the same time you're lecturing America about its racism and its illiberality and then saying, oh, by the way, we're multimillionaires and we want you of the middle class to keep paying our salaries and patronizing. It's just not gonna work. The NBA is doing the same thing, but where the NBA has an advantage, it's lost, it has about a 48% African American audience, but it's lost most of its white, Hispanic, and Asian audiences because it's even more non-diverse. But what they've done is they've looked toward the 1.4 billion person market in China. And so they've got a $6 billion franchising, advertising gimmick to go over to illiberal China, be very careful about censoring any criticism of China while regaining their woke credentials by unloading on their own country. But the NFL doesn't yet have that alternative to make up lost revenue with Chinese lucre.
Well, corporate and television sponsorship of both leagues is critical to their survival. One could almost, given your view, imagine the NBA moving to Beijing for its center of organization and headquarters. We'll have to see. You get the last quick word here, Victor.
Yeah. Well, I think in the case of the NBA, they've almost deliberately neglected any other audience than the young African American male viewer who's very loyal but doesn't have enough numbers to sustain an average salary of $8 million. So they're deliberately looking toward China so they can maintain their, their non-diverse politicized messaging to the United States that doesn't appeal to many fans anymore.
Absolutely. Victor Davis Hanson, always good talking to you. Thanks so much.
Now, the subtitle is Trump will smash the left and win. Do you, is that your prognostication?
That's my faith is, well, first of all, in the book Blitz, I describe how Trump disarms the left, why it difficult for them to defeat him. When you think of it, I mean, they have the whole intellectual, cultural establishment. They have all these despicable media people battering him every day. My book explains why he can prevail in those circumstances, why he is able to reach people. One of the things is that he, you know, I've always described myself as a second thoughter. I began on the left. That's how I know how malevolent and evil they are. Well, Trump also, you know, most of his adult career was spent pretty much as a liberal. So he has, and he wrote a book in the 20 years ago, in 2000, and, you know, which he comes out for school choice and the defense of inner city black kids who are getting a raw deal from, he doesn't pin that on the Democratic Party, although that's where it needs to be pinned, but or getting a raw deal from the school systems in our inner cities. So he had a confidence. It's the same reason that I'm as outspoken as I am. I mean, partly I have, you know, I have my center as independent. I can't be deplatformed. Well, I could be deplatformed. I have been, actually. But I don't have a lot to risk in this battle, the way somebody, you know, like Tucker Carlson, a very courageous guy, say, calling it like it is, but he could be fired. You just don't know if you're out there in public. So I think that Trump was confident in his moral values from having been, you know, brought up with, as it were, the civil rights movement. He even got awards. And that allowed him to go right in the face of his enemies. And people, the reason that his supporters are so loyal, they see the wounds this guy is taking to them and standing up to it. You got to love him for that. He's got faults. You know, courage, lacking courage is not one of them.
That's
and
right.
It's making all the difference.
Yeah.
It's because I think the American people are not stupid. There are lots of stupid people among us, but as a people, they're not stupid. And they can see the Democrats, they want open borders. They support our enemies. I mean, side with China and the coronavirus. You know, that was, in effect, a biological weapon they use against the rest of the world. And the Democratic Party is blaming Trump and defending World Health Organization, which is run by a terrorist.
Wait, you're breaking.
What the Democrats are willing to do, but it is a treasonous party, and I think most Americans are patriotic.
Let me read something from your book. Give people an idea why this is so important. It's a very brief book. The top 10 lies the Democrats have told you. And let me read you number 4 from his book, Blitz. Slavery and racism are America's true heritage. His answer, no, freedom is. That's exactly right. Everyone in the world, every society on earth, black societies, white societies, Arab societies, all practiced slavery. The legacy of America, the heritage of America, is freedom. Go on.
It's a big lie. I mean, Al Sharpton said white people had their knee on the necks of blacks for 401 years. Well, that's 1619. There was no America in 1619. It was an English colony. And as a matter of fact, in Virginia, where the 20 alleged slaves were shipped, which is why the left wants to make that our founding, they were indentured servants, like the rest of labor in Virginia. Virginia outlawed slavery at the time. It wasn't instituted till the end of the 17th century. And America was born with this revolutionary idea. I mean, slavery had been accepted by all societies and all moral teachers for 3,000 years until, as it happens, Protestant Christians said it was immoral Thomas Jefferson wrote into the Declaration of Independence not only that all men are created equal, but they have a God-given right to liberty. Within 87 years, that's the duration of slavery in America. First of all, they started freeing the slaves in the North. They were, I think, all free by 1807, and the slave trade was outlawed. But, you know, they shrank from going to war with the South because the South was strong, and it would have allied with the British, who had burned the White House. But 87 years later, at the cost of 350,000 mainly white lives, the slaves were free. Slavery was abolished. That's the Emancipation Proclamation. 87 years, not 401. And then the brute fact of the matter is, all the slaves shipped to America were enslaved by black Africans. You know, you even hear Mitch McConnell bowing to these lies.
That's right.
Okay, so the reason why laissez-faire capitalism has never actually existed is because there's always been a state. Would that be fair for you to say?
Yes.
Okay, so your idea is if we remove the state, then laissez-faire capitalism can work perfectly. Or at least,
again, I have no idea what the word perfectly means.
Yeah,
I don't know what that
closer
means.
To the sort of general ideas of what makes
I don't know
free market.
I don't care how
I mean, there's general principles of free market.
No, Kevin, I don't care how it works. I know that the initiation of force is immoral and the state is an agency of coercion. So you're asking me, well, if we get rid of slavery, will crops be picked perfectly? That's not what I'm hanging getting rid of slavery on. I don't care how the crops are picked. I know slavery is wrong. I don't care what happens afterwards. So as far as like, oh, will the free market have a chance to do X, Y, and Z? I don't care. The initiation of force is immoral. The state is an agency of coercion, an agency of violence, and it is wrong. It is wrong. It is as wrong as slavery. It is as wrong as rape. And so what? How do people get married if we don't force them to rape each other? I don't care. I don't know. Something will come along, and I don't even care what it is. But I do care that the fundamental moral stain that's currently at the heart of society gets at least challenged on its ethical basis.
Well, and I'm in agreement with that from the but the sort of question I have, or the I think where the interesting sort of dialogue between you and me would be if you don't have a state, so you don't have the whole coercive influence of the state at all, and then your I don't know if it's your position or if you just think that. If you had a society that didn't have a state and was based on a certain set of principles like, you know, non-aggression and things like that, that a sort of market system from property rights would then develop and would at least be allowed to function without the coercive influence of the state, thereby using things like the market forces, price determinations, things like that. Would be able to work in a way where the system would sort of work. Is that fair? I mean, it would work.
Again,
I don't know what
work means. If you have a society that's founded on the
non-aggression,
let me finish. If you have a society that's founded on the non-aggression principle, then all interactions are voluntary. Now, does that mean people aren't going to make mistakes? Of course they're going to make mistakes. You know, it's like a perfect free market. Who knows? People are going to invest in spaceships that turn over sideways and blow up, right? People are going to invest in some crop that fails. They're going to buy turkey farms, and the turkeys are all going to get hit by plague or drought. You know, they're going to buy a house next to a river that overflows and destroys. Like, there's always going to be problems. Right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
That's natural.
Yeah.
There's always risk in human life. So I don't know what perfect or any of that means. But what I do know, so if we stop putting a gun to everyone's head and making them rape each other, people might still break up. They might still cry and listen to too many Adele songs, right? So, but the point is that if you are not forcing people to get married and have sex with each other, all the resulting relationships will be voluntary. Now, does that mean they'll be perfect? Of course not. I don't even know what that would mean. But they're voluntary, which means that nobody's got a gun to their head. And that means some people are going to accept too little money. for, and some people are going to ask for too much money. And some people are going to have buyer's remorse. They're going to buy a house and they're going to look at it the next day and say, I hate this place for whatever reason. That's going to happen. But it's voluntary. Now, what happens after things become voluntary? I don't know. I don't care. It doesn't matter. Because if I did care and it did matter what happened after human relations become voluntary, it would mean I would be back in the fascist seat of central planning again. All I want is for people to be free, to make their mistakes, to interact with voluntary, to grow, to learn, to love, to fail, as they see fit according to their own conscience and their own choices. How that shakes out in the world, I couldn't care less, because there's no way to know. If you could know, be an argument for the state again.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and today is May 27th, 2020. Well, the political scene, the lockdowns seem to be abating, but they are not abating in certain states. What does it mean for the election? Will Trump get reelected? Well, there's a new book coming out in just 7 days entitled Blitz, Trump Will Smash the Left and Win, by our good friend David Horowitz. And we'd like to know what your opinion is on the upcoming election. Why don't you send us an email, kl@kerrylutz.com, kl@kerrylutz.com, and let us know what you think. So, David, welcome back as always. And new book coming out, Trump Will Smash the Left and Win, in just a matter of days. Tell us about it.
And American values are Christian values. And I say this as an agnostic, non-observant Jew. I say it as an American, that our basic freedoms and values, liberty, equality, tolerance, and inclusion, they're all originated as Christian ideas and actually Protestant Christian ideas. Mm-hmm. And you can't really understand their nature if you don't understand that. And the Democratic Party wants to abolish the Electoral College, and they also want to commit massive election voter fraud. But Elizabeth Warren infamously said that, you know, she wants one person, one vote. Well, the founders obviously didn't. That's why they created the Senate, which Democrats want to destroy, and other institutions, which we refer to collectively as a system of checks and balances, because they understood that people can be swept up in mass hysteria. You can see it in the anti-Trump mania that's going on the left in this country. Doesn't make any sense. It's deranged. So the founders were very clever. They felt sovereign, because you don't want one monarch being deranged and having all the power. But they put checks and balances on the will of the people, in the hopes of delaying things until everybody calmed down.
So
the new book I have, Blitz, it's not so much about technically why Trump will win. It doesn't have charts and polls and things like that, which are not very good guides anyway. It's really about the Trump wars, about the war that the Democrats declared on Trump and the permanent coup. This is unprecedented. We've never had a coup d'etat in this country until Obama launched this one. And that's what the book is really about.
Right. So when you're looking at it, I mean, the pandemic, never let a crisis go to waste. They seem to think they can ride the pandemic to victory.
Well, they have, and they're trying to shut down the economy to drive Trump of his major electoral asset. But, you know, one thing my book does say is that you could just cry wolf so many times. I mean, they've kind of shot their anti-Trump wad over and over now. It's going on 4 years that they've called this guy all kinds of take names like racist. I mean, how can you call Trump a racist? You know, when he pardoned Alice Johnson, the Democrats had her in jail for 21 years on a nonviolent drug charge, this black grandmother. Trump is responsible for the criminal justice reform known as the First Step Act, which no other Republican or Democrat could have pulled off. Obama had 8 years, and during the 8 years, he didn't have any criminal justice reform, and he didn't let Alice Johnson out of jail. And I could go on and on. There's many other things that Trump's done. But it's anybody looking at Trump, you know, Trump had, he was a public figure. It's not like he came out of nowhere as an unknown. He was a public figure for 30 or 40 years and a liberal. Well, you know, his money went to liberal causes and liberal candidates. But the liberals have betrayed their own, I don't really want to call it beliefs, because if they were true beliefs, they wouldn't have abandoned them, but positions. The only actual liberals in America today are conservatives who believe there should be two sides to a conversation. The Democrats are shutting down. You know, just turn on MSNBC or CNN or, you know, read the New York Times or the Washington Post. It's all leftism. There's no diversity of viewpoint, which is a kind of fundamental principle of liberalism. Mm-hmm. And in fact, when I was a radical in the 60s, I actually wanted to hear what the other side had to say. I thought it would make me a better radical. But today's radicals and the Democrats, they don't want, you know, the. Yeah, how far can you go? Like, is it Kamala Harris and several of them have demanded that Twitter take away Trump's Twitter feed so people can't hear what he has to say. It's unreal. And these are totalitarians.
Yeah. Yeah, like restricting free speech. They seem they're all for free speech, except for other people, it seems.
Well, exactly. And that's why the religion, the First Amendment, It's the First Amendment for a reason. It's the basis of all of our freedoms. If you can't hold your own opinions and express them, then you can't defend any of your freedoms. That's why it's so crucial. And it begins, its foundation is religious liberty. Let's remember that 98% of the people who settled this country were Protestant Christians who were fleeing religious persecution by other religions using the power of the state. That's where our freedoms come from. That's why it's the First Amendment. But for Democrats these days, religious liberty means you can think anything you want so long as you keep it to yourself. You know, the figure who illuminates that most is Vice President Pence and that little snake Pete Buttigieg.
Yeah.
Mayor Pete, who's always is attacking tax Pence as a homophobe, whereas there's a lot of public. Well, first of all, Pence was the governor of the state that Mayor Pete is a mayor in. And when he came out as gay, Pence effectively put his arm around him and praised him as a mayor, even though he's a terrible mayor.
Yeah, awful.
As out of control crime issues in that little town that he is the mayor of, and racism. So, but Pence went out of his way to make him feel comfortable publicly, and he got paid back by being called a bigot. And he's a bigot because he's a, you know, a Christian who believes that that gay marriage is not right. Not that he's done anything.
Yeah.
Not that he's actually done anything that's offensive to gay people, just his views. There's nothing more anti-democratic than condemning somebody just because they disagree with you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I think a lot more of the agenda of the left has come out during the pandemic, don't you think?
Well, yeah, I wrote a series of articles on that. We have the war against the invisible virus, which affects everybody. And in a war, the country normally comes together. We have unity, and we fight the war together. We don't fight the war as Democrats or Republicans. But what's happened in this pandemic is that Trump has done this. He's funded all these Democrat governors, provided them with ventilators and masks. That's what the federal government is supposed to do, and money. And fought this ecumenically. But the Democrats have declared war on Trump. They're using the virus to try to destroy Trump. They've even accused him of killing all 100,000 people. Actually, I've been accused of it too for supporting him. But, I mean, this is disgusting, and it's treasonous. And there's no other way to describe it. In the middle of a war, you attack your commander-in-chief and you do it on a partisan basis. That's treason.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of treasonous behavior, what's going to come of Obamagate? Are these people going to be brought to justice?
I think they will prosecute people. I'm not sure. I mean, Obama is the one responsible for it. That's a much trickier question because of the political ramifications of putting Obama in jail, which is where he belongs. I mean, this isn't the only act of treason that Obama's committed. Mm. And people should, I mean, I remember when I first realized that Obama had used the intelligence agencies to try to destroy his political opponent, how horrific that is. It's Banana Republic stuff. But, you know, I felt the same way when he gave $200 billion and a path to nuclear weapons to the Hitlerites in Tehran, the Islamic Nazis that run Iran. In the so-called Iran deal, Iran has killed thousands of Americans. Every time you see a wounded warrior and those ads for the wounded warriors, that's somebody who was blown up by an Iranian IED. Mm-hmm. And of course they attacked the Marine barracks in Lebanon in 1983 and killed, I can't remember the exact number, but it was something like 280 Marines.
Yes.
This is an evil regime, and it's as anti-American as, you know, it's like giving money and a nuclear weapon to Hitler. Mm-hmm. And that's what Obama did. And he did it. He knew he couldn't get it passed. He circumvented the Senate is supposed to ratify treaties. He went to the UN.
Yeah.
So my book, Blitz, which will be out in 7 days on June 2nd, although it would help the book if anybody out there is interested in what I'm saying here, if you pre-order it, it's really about the transformation of the Democratic Party and why Trump is the first Republican who's been effective in combating it. Usually Republicans roll over when they're attacked and start apologizing, and Trump goes back in their face. I think most people realize this now, that fighting fire with fire is the way to go if you want to survive. He's incredibly unprincipled, Machiavellian, and malicious Democrat attacks.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we've seen there's kind of, there's no, like, limits now. There's no limits to what they'll say, what they'll do.
None, yeah, and they take no responsibility for what they say. You know, if Trump, he called Hillary Shamu or whatever. Mm-hmm. He attacks Pelosi. Pelosi, you know, it's just a response to their viciousness. They want Republicans to have their hands tied. You know, the way they've attacked Trump's Kayleigh McEnany. Press secretary for holding their feet to the fire and saying, why aren't you asking questions about this? She didn't use the word treason, but this treason that's been committed by Obama.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, good question.
They destroyed our press, the left. I was just reading on Breitbart, the co-founder of Wikipedia has pointed out how they destroyed neutrality of Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. Anybody who tries to do research on Google using Google will know that you have to go through 3 or 4 or 5 pages indexes of articles before you find a conservative viewpoint.
Oh yeah, we know that for sure. That's obvious. Yeah, yeah, we're in a war here. Maybe we're not taking up arms yet, like in the Great Civil War.
Well, you can't. You know, you really. I mean, I expect. I'm surprised there hasn't been more bloodshed. But we can't have a civil war as we did in, when the Democrats seceded from the Union the last time in 1860, because the federal government has grown so big, you know, nobody can launch a war, you know, either against Trump or for him. I mean, it'll be just crushed. Mm-hmm. So the war is a political war, and the weapons are words that destroy your reputation and credibility.
Right.
Accusations that are libels, except we have no libel laws in this country.
Yeah, apparently not. So
no, we don't. I mean, I've been libeled myself so many times.
Well, forget that.
For those of your listeners who don't understand this, because of Supreme Court rulings, if you call somebody a racist, that's not libel, that's opinion. You have to say they're the number one racist in the country. Then you've made a factual claim, which could open you. But then you have to prove damages. You have to prove that whoever libeled you knew that what they were telling was a lie. That's so easy to prove. So we have no libel laws, and they just feel free. That's why the media is so bad now, because they have no liability legally.
Yeah, well, still they managed to get them, like on the Sandman case. That was an exceptional case.
This is a minor. I'm amazed. I mean, I'm thrilled that he won. But, you know, you pick a kid and spear him like that.
Yeah, well, that's why, because he was a minor.
Notice that Indian who was banging a drum in his face.
Yeah.
He got off. He's immune because he's an Indian.
Yeah.
Oh, excuse me, a Native American.
Well, Indian's fine. I kind of buy into that. So what's ahead here? Do you think that Biden is really going to be the nominee?
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
I never have thought that.
Same here.
Bernie has not given up his delegates, which means that Biden is not going to be able to win the necessary minimum. They have to win 1991 delegates to get the nomination. So there's going to be a second round. And in the second round, it fixes it.
Yeah.
The super delegates vote. So they'll just appoint somebody like Hillary.
Yeah, and Hillary cannot grab the Midwest. They need the Midwest to win. We know this. There's just no way that she can win.
Well, we don't, you know, it's a everything now is unknown. I mean, they're going to have this election fraud.
Mm-hmm.
It's just insanity. Newsom sent out 21 million ballots to every registered voter. There's probably a million questionable already. So there's a million people whose registrations aren't proper or correct or no longer live at the addresses or died.
Yes.
So all those ballots will be out there. They're anonymous ballots. So somebody can harvest them as the technical term, I guess.
Yeah.
Just pick them up, fill in whoever the Democrat is, and win that way. I used to live in California, and I can tell you my brother-in-law is retarded. So his mentality is that of a five-year-old. And after the 2012 election, and he lives in a home for, I don't know what the technical word, the politically correct word is, but in a home for people whose similarly brains are impaired. And he just dropped at a Thanksgiving dinner that he had voted for Obama. Mm-hmm. And so we asked him, how did he vote for Obama? He said, well, the people who run the home that he was in, which is a state-run home, told him that if Obama wasn't elected, they owed everything to Obama. And if Obama wasn't reelected, they would lose their home. And then they bust them to the polls, and the poll officials just let them vote.
Yeah.
They were all retarded.
Yep, we've seen that.
Anecdotal case.
It's not that anecdotal. It's a lot more widespread than you ever believed possible.
And well, apparently there's a Supreme Court decision where they did an investigation, and they said that there's 24 million people on the voter rolls who don't belong there.
Yeah. I believe it.
That's enough to sway any election.
Yes. Yeah, well. Yeah. Well, we're definitely in for it. But you really think that Trump's going to win in spite of all this, huh?
Well, I wrote this, you know, I don't know what resources they have. Of course, it doesn't really matter. California and New York.
They're gone.
And none of these national polls make it mean anything also. Because they can, you know, cast as many fraudulent ballots as they want in New York and California. It doesn't affect the actual vote, which is in the Electoral College. And I think that Trump will take measures that will make it difficult for them in the other states. But the basic reason is I think it's transparent. You know, you can't call Trump a lunatic, a racist, psychotic, whatever else they thrown at him 4 years running and have any credibility
right at
the end of the 4 years. And I think that there's a tremendous movement now in the black community. Well, the first several chapters of my book, Blitz, Trump Will Smash the Left and Win, are about Trump's appeal to black America. And that's why they hate him, and that's why they call him a racist, because they, you know, every 4 years they call a Republican candidate a racist. They did it to Bush. They did it to McCain. They did it to Romney. And they do it because the Democrats, I don't know if they are conscious of this, but they have to be aware that they are the racist party. Everything is about race for them. Identity politics makes race primary. You judge people by their skin color first and their gender and sexual orientation. The individual disappears. But Democrats also run every major inner city in America.
That they do.
You know, all the crime centers, the poverty centers, the school systems that
COVID-19
teach
centers.
The kids to read and write and destroy their lives at the outset. Those are all 100% run by the Democratic Party.
Sure,
and the Democratic Party does nothing to change this because the teacher unions are representing the adults, not the students.
Feeding off the system.
Yeah. So, of course, I think black, you know, Kanye West is the revolutionary who broke that lock that they have. Just,
yeah.
And you see it. I mean, the Biden comment, if you don't vote for me, you're not black, or if you hate black.
Yeah.
feels the Democrat mentality.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just, they're racists.
Among other things.
The most important racist institution
yes.
in America.
Yeah.
Hey. Their 1619 project, which wants to shift the American founding from 1776 and its clarion call for freedom for all human beings are created equal and with a God-given right to liberty. That revolutionary statement, they want to obliterate it and make the founding 1619.
Which is ridiculous.
20 Africans were brought as slaves to Virginia. The problem with that is slavery was illegal in Virginia in 1619, and the 20 who were brought were indentured servants, as was most of the mostly white labor force in Virginia at the time. But it's just a travesty to shift. And there were English colonies that weren't American. America was created in 1776.
Yes.
But, you know, the New York Times is a racist rag, and this project is racist. And, of course, it's going to be in all the schools. It's already in 3,500 schools in 50 states because of the communist teacher unions. Mm. And for anybody shocked by that description, I was brought up in the communist movement. I know what a communist looks and thinks like.
Yeah.
But I think it should be pretty obvious anyway who these people are.
Oh, we know. We know everybody knows what they are, and you shall know them by their deeds and what they're about. I think the whole thing is worn thin. You know, there's that old that meme that's up there that said nobody called Trump a racist until he ran for president. Anyway, David, thank you so much for coming on. We will talk to you again soon. Great luck on the upcoming book. And of course, as always, you can find David's work over on frontpagemag.com, extensive writing, and there's a link to the Amazon pre-order page in the show notes of this interview. Again, thank you so much, David. We'll talk to you soon.